Philip, say Sally sells seashells down at the seashore.
Sally has a unique business where she sells things that come from the sea to protect other things in the sea. She does this down where there is sand and water meeting.
Eric, could you say, you know, New York, you need New York, you know, you need unique New York?
New York is a cesspool and no one should ever go there.
Thank you.
No problem, buddy.
Drew, could you say red leather, yellow leather, good blood, bad blood?
The thing with leather tanning that you need to understand is that there's the old ways and there's the new ways. And I'm not going to come in between them. I just want a good product shipped.
Good point.
All right, our sound check is done.
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hi, I'm Matt.
First we'll have a little chat,
then put on our ring brothers.
Now it's time for Next at Bat.
And we're here with Drew and Matt. Hi, guys. Drew and Matt, if you don't know.
Hi, Philip.
Is Drew Kirsten. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. And Next at Bat's very own Matthew McLeod.
Hi, Philip.
Wait, what's he doing on the other side of the microphone?
It looks like the backstroke.
Yep. Yep, that's it.
Since Matt is in the group we're interviewing, that means that myself, Philip Simondet, will be the interviewer, which means a lot of you might skip this episode, but you shouldn't, because Matt is still here, and Drew Kirsten's here. As Drew and Matt, which is a duo.
You're doing great, Phil.
Oh, God. I hope so.
Yeah.
This
is what I do. I just give positive reinforcement.
That's right.
Good job, Phil.
That supportive voice is coming from today's co-host. Filling in for Philip today is...
Eric Heiberg.
Thank you so much. I need all the help I can get.
Yeah.
Because I, Philip Simondet, will be running this interview as Matt McLeod.
You're a genius.
So, you've had one Improv and Go-Go run so far.
Mm-hmm. We have.
And I saw all those shows, and they were fantastic.
Thanks.
Matt told me that you guys actually formed like a year ago and rehearsed together mm-hmm. for a year before you even submitted for a Go-Go slot. You want
to... We did, yeah. So I moved to Minnesota last year. I got here in August of 2012. And then we, like the rest of our house and everything, got here mm-hmm. in October. That's a weird way to put it.
Yeah. And we met in September, I think.
Yeah, in September at one of the Wednesday drop-in classes.
Yeah,
and
Jill introduced us.
I believe so, yeah. So the first two people to reach out to me to do improv were Matt McLeod and Jill Bernard.
Yep.
And I was pretty desperate for an improv fix, and they were my drug dealers.
Jill Bernard, I remember it was a relatively crowded room. I don't remember what it was for. You said it was dropping. That makes sense. But Jill, I remember, called me over and said, Matt, I have somebody you need to meet. This is Drew. You two should do a duo. And that was it. And then she walked away. Mm-hmm. And
she's a matchmaker.
She does that, though.
Yeah, I think that was after we hadn't met, but we were aware of each other, because I think we'd done a drop-in together before that.
I think that that's true.
But at that point, we'd not shook hands and talked.
It's still a good show, Phil. You're doing great.
Thank you.
I believe in you.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, no worries, man.
I know you can't speak for Jill Bernard, but what did Jill Bernard see in the two of you that she thought would make a good combination?
I don't know, but she does seem to read personalities and styles really well. She's made these calls a lot. She's a really, really good improv matchmaker. Do you have any ideas?
I guess at the time she probably wanted to fuck both of us.
Yeah.
And she channeled that elsewhere. She's like, how can I get my pent up energy for these two?
Just put them together.
And I'll put them together. Yeah. And that'll
distract
channel
them
away.
Long enough. Yeah.
Correct.
That's probably right.
That was my thought.
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that, playing with Drew is probably when I'm most comfortable on stage. So, she's right. I don't know what it is about, you know, our personalities, but they do seem to fit well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that comfort from just your personalities matching or the work that you've put in over a year of rehearsal?
I don't know if we'd call it rehearsal right away.
Yeah.
It was more just doing improv for the pleasure of getting together to do improv.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, shows were on our mind as something we wanted to do.
But yeah, right away, actually. But yeah. I think in the first time we got together, we just started messing around and seeing what felt right. Well, I remember at the end of the first time we I guess rehearsed, I don't know, worked some stuff out. Mm-hmm. At the end of that, we ended up doing a character switching scene that was a little extended and moved into a couple of different locales, and it mm-hmm. just kind of made sense. And after that scene, we both were like, oh, hell yeah. I remember Matt Pittner was there. Mm-hmm. He was setting up the bar, and he saw it, and he was like, said something about if we wanted to open up for the Bearded Men. And we were like, we're going to hold off for a little while.
We should get around to that now.
Yeah, we should get around to that. And we just kind of wanted to figure out what we wanted to do before we started performing. Mm-hmm. And I think that just, we wanted to work some stuff out for a while and get more comfortable. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
It seems like you have a lot of opportunity when you do play with someone for a while, that you have the opportunity to do things you wouldn't normally do, you know, in the scene of like logistics that you wouldn't normally mm-hmm. necessarily see with just two people who have just seeing each other or just improvising with each other for the first time, you know. So, yeah, little logistic things.
Well, and it's interesting because it's not like we have a shtick. We don't have a thing to like sell the show. It took us a while to kind of figure out what our quote unquote form was, and that's still evolving. Even in the last time we rehearsed, which was 2 days ago?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
We did something that we've never done before, and the kind of split mile.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it, you know, it worked, and it also seemed very us. Like, yeah. it seemed like fit with our style, very much so.
So what was it that made you decide you were show ready?
We won the Agogo lottery.
That's how most groups decide they're ready.
I mean, we theoretically could have done a show together right away, I think.
I think so.
But it would have been different. It was yep. worth our while to take that time, absolutely. Well, because I'd formally never actually performed in a duo before. I'd been in groups where only two people showed up for a show. but in the past cities that I've improvised with, or in, I improvise with cities. The city is a part of me. That duos weren't as big of a deal.
For me, being on stage in a duo is, when you think about it, it should be tricky because you're always on, you have a lot of space to fill, you have a lot of responsibility, blah, blah, blah. But I'm never more comfortable on stage than in this duo. And I think it is probably because, I mean, it's not probably, it's definitely because of how much work we've put in mm-hmm. together and how much playtime we've had, just the two of us. We work really similarly. Mm-hmm. We both like to play for a while, analyze for a bit, tinker, fix, play again, tinker, fix, play again. And we're both good at that. Mm-hmm. And we're both good at staying loose, but also staying focused.
Yeah, we have a good habit of, all right, we do a scene, usually a pretty long one, like
yep.
knock out like a 10-minute scene.
Yep.
In by cracking up.
Yeah.
Talk about it for a bit, but then really just grab like one thing that we could both apply to try to get into the next one too.
Yep.
Like, oh, okay, we were like something super simple. We both sat in the chair and didn't move the whole time that time. Mm-hmm. Let's try to change the energy.
Yeah, let's focus on some space work this time to loosen us up. Just to kind of make us more and more well-rounded so we don't get stuck doing one thing, and we want to keep the possibilities of what we can do open. The idea of, you know, not getting stuck in one location, which we still do, and we know we mm-hmm. want to, you know, get better at that. But we're always talking about options and trying to get more. And so we kind of push each other towards mm-hmm. doing that, but in a very loose way. We'll start scenes differently constantly. Mm-hmm. We're both very open to that, and it's fun. And I think it does come from, you know, working together for so long and kind of having that trust level build over time.
Well, yeah, the form seems to be evolving out of what you're kind of philosophy seems to be, whether you realize it or not. Like this whole split monologue seems to just be a condensed way to do what we talked about your group already does,
before, is that adding depth to characters. Is that, when did that kind of become the thing of the group, to delve into these deep aspects of each of these characters?
I think my working with Matt coincided with me also spending most of this year trying to do less big characters and more versions of myself. And I think when I speak in a voice that's more straightforward versus going into this guy right away, it's easier to find your way into those situations. Because this guy, he might eulogize the death of his brother, but it's way harder to do it than just to talk like this and eulogize the death of your brother. For me, anyway.
Yeah.
I would love to get to a point where this guy can also do it with equal weight, but I'm not there.
Right. No. I find, like, a lot of times when we have, like, a character that we decide to put out there, I think when at the very beginning of the scene, sometimes we just don't believe in that idea of, like, I am enough, you know, it is.
Yeah.
And so we wind up just going, this character better have some deal shit. Here he goes. Okay, here he comes. What is it? What's coming out of my mouth? Hey, Brian, come over here and get the car, huh? You know, as opposed to, which is great, but, you know, by the same token, like, that guy also has, you know, a wife and family and bills to pay and what have you. And he has a slight interest in American football, but he doesn't understand it yet. You know what I mean? Like, these are things that are important, that are more important than the actual, like, affectations of the character, et cetera, so. Yeah, I wound up finding myself struggling with the same thing where this character, like, I just have this normal voice. I'm not trying to affect any kind of do anything with my voice, but there's all this rich, there's this massive, large places to go with variations of your personality that extend, I think, beyond just the first four emotions. And that's, I think that was one of my problems, was just like, glad, sad, mad, afraid, and I would just do those. And like, well, now I have four characters, you know? And then there's a whole wide world of them, and it's just hard to explore those kind of nuances, so.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think for me, yeah, I mean, first of all, I come from the scripted acting background, so my tendency is to want to jump into deep characters and to, you know, explore that. And kind of what, dovetailing off of what you're saying, Eric, is you know, when you start off in a place where it's hard to layer depth right away, but, you know, if you keep listening and keep layering and keep making everything that's said count, then all of a sudden you've got some pretty deep characters right away, or, like, you know, pretty shortly into a scene. And then I think what Drew and I try to do is, now what? You know, keep asking ourselves, now what? What's next? And where can we go? And because it doesn't just have to be a 2-minute, 3-minute scene. And you know, we do tend to do longer sequences with characters and see how far we can go with them.
Which, yeah, I would imagine is definitely important for a duo, especially. So you attribute a lot to that time you spent together that year. But also, Drew, you're also in another duo, The Pitch.
Correct.
With Jordan Boehner.
Correct.
And I've seen you in several groups, and you're always great.
I'm an improv slut.
I think that's a great thing to be. There's less diseases than a regular slut.
Depends how you improvise.
Oh. And who with? So I've seen you in lots of groups, and you're always great in groups, but when I saw you in Drew and Matt and in The Pitch in particular, you really kind of stuck out in a duo. Like, I thought, I was meaning to tell you that I thought duo might just be a great form to showcase you in particular, and we can expand this to what do both of you think needs to be part of a duo, like what makes a duo work. But you want to start with why you think you're good in duos?
You want me to tell you why I'm good?
Yes.
Finally, somebody asked me the question I want to talk about. Let's drop all the false pretenses.
Absolutely.
Well, Philip in Minneapolis, here's why I'm good. Okay, so for me personally, I think why I enjoy duos is I like playing weirdos. Mm-hmm. I think that's fairly well known. And the duo allows me and my scene partner to give weirdos depth that you don't otherwise get. Because in a group, if you come out with, hey guys, it's usually just a quick hit and mm-hmm. maybe a supporting character or maybe not, and then it moves on. But if you end up in a big weird character, and then the duo gives it time to find out what that guy does mm-hmm. when he's off duty, it can be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like the I think was it our first or second show when I was the guy who was getting over his dead wife.
Yeah,
That was the first one.
I think that was the
going
first
to the
one.
Bars.
Yeah, by going to bars.
That was great. Yeah,
like that was. Yeah, that was really interesting to play both sides of that guy, right?
And then we had the extended scene on the airplane.
Yeah,
that was a fun scene where I was the uncomfortable guy who just wanted a friend.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right.
If anyone wants to see these, what you do is you bring a flash drive to Butch.
Yep.
And you get the exact date and you say...
How improv was meant to be. Right.
On a computer screen after the fact.
Yeah, I think for me, what makes a duo so effective is that it is the perfect combination of you're thinking the whole time. I mean, you're constantly checking in with what's the equation of the scene. There's a lot of different elements, and for us, a lot of our scenes go very long. I wouldn't be surprised in our upcoming run if we have a couple of shows that are mono scenes.
Sure. It's always a threat because we don't say ahead of time.
No.
Yeah.
We don't have any set idea for that. So there's a lot of history to our scenes as they go on. There's a lot of, we tend to play relatively deep characters, I think. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of different layers that keeping track of blah, blah, blah. And yet at the same time, constantly present. My biggest weakness as an improviser is overthinking. Sure. And in a duo, I can't.
Right.
Like all of my brain capacity is taken up. And so the benefit is that I'm constantly working. I'm focused and in the moment at the same time.
Yeah, because when I'm on the back line in a non-duo, my brain is really flying.
Yep.
What's the game of the scene? How can I support it?
Yep.
No? Okay, what might be an analogous version of this scene?
Yep.
Don't think about that. You're getting out of the moment. Just get back in here. Okay, wait. Oh, shoot. Did my wife just walk in? Wow, she's late. All of that, like,
yeah.
Even though you're trying to be there, yep. Whereas when you're on stage, which you always are in a duo effectively,
yeah.
There's a little room for that.
Right. Unless you're behind the screen and you're a kid. And we're talking about Vikings, which is such a cheat scene. God, that was a cheat scene.
But it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
It was specifics. It was mm-hmm. relevant at the time. It was like up to date or whatever.
Yeah. It was a scene where Drew was a kid and I was a mom. And we were talking about, we were using the Vikings as an analogy for our family. And Drew and I might know a thing or two about the Vikings.
The specifics got deep.
The specifics got pretty deep.
Yeah, you do tend to have longer scenes. And I'm also intrigued by, I don't know if you're still doing this, you may have evolved out of it, but during the go-go run, it seemed like one person would tend to start a scene by themselves while the other person would stay off stage and just kind of drink it in for half a minute before interacting. Is that kind of fulfill the same function of just letting some information get out there first so that can be important before it gets glossed over?
I don't know how we started on that. Was that with you?
I think that was with Eric.
Might have started with Fucked Up Companion. Was that?
Oh, that might have started.
Been. Yeah. I'm just inspired by Fucked Up Companion, not actually.
We should publicly note that we've engaged Eric Heiberg as a coach from time to time.
Yeah. I tell him to get naked all the time. That's the one that I assume you guys do that in the show.
The warm up he introduced is called Greased Pig. If you've ever seen that, where they oil up those pigs and then the kids chase after them get them, we effectively just do that.
Yeah,
basically, awesome. It's amazing. Exactly. Yeah,
it's pretty crazy. Fucked Up Companion is a I guess, is a warm-up exercise. Or not a warm-up exercise. It's just a lovely exercise that, as far as I know, a soft Ronin.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, Ronin. Created. And I freaking quote that guy so much. But yeah, and he, it's just this really bizarre thing where you have one chair, that, or just have a chair that's empty, and then one person engages with the character that's not there for a good amount of time, and then somebody else comes in and fills in that character, fills in the endowments that the other person had given that character, usually trying to fuck up the scene. What you guys are clearly doing is taking aspects of that. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the focus of that particular exercise was how to get into a place where it doesn't matter what this person is endowed with, you're going, or what this person decides to, you know, how we fuck with each other and push to the extremes of what this person, what our endowments will be.
Right, right.
I'm playing a dead person. I'm playing a dog. I'm playing a, you know. Mm-hmm. That we still wind up trying to have an actual scene with that. So
the scene from the Agogo run where I was playing poker and you came in was effectively that exercise on
it was,
stage.
It was completely that exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fun exercise. It always makes you laugh.
Yeah, we talked about that scene before, that poker scene, because Drew clearly established that he was playing poker with a table full of poker buddies, and
he didn't deal.
Yeah, he did deal. I thought I saw him deal cards. Mm. Yep.
And then what happened?
We'll go to the tape.
I didn't see this thing.
And then what happened is Matt came out. That's mm-hmm. the other one. Mm-hmm. Matt came out mm-hmm. and it negated everything. He told him that he was actually
that's my tipped opinion.
Yeah. He told Drew, the other one.
Yeah.
He told Drew that he was actually at an internet cafe playing poker online with no companions.
Yay.
And then continued to negate everything he said.
And he was talking shit to the corner.
And then continued to say no to just about everything Drew put out there for the next 5 minutes. But it worked amazingly.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Oh, actually, this is a good question. This is a lot of stuff that I found when I first started doing improv, which was I started to understand, oh, this is I'll put this in a little book called Good Improv. Mm-hmm. Where we do all the things correctly and we get all the names right and we cheat out to the audience or whatever. And then there's this other little book over here that's nebulous and has a lot of, it's just made up of post-its, I think, called the Book of Bad Improv. And like, well, this worked and this worked. And it's kind of hard to navigate, clearly.
Yeah.
Some people, it's like this thing of bad improv that worked. And not only did it work, but it worked better than the good improv ever could have. And it's this bizarre melding of this tome of good improv and these little post-it notes that just like, well, shit, I just negated everything he said. We did it in this weird, trusting, and loving environment.
Right.
And that's the thing I think we'll never be able to explore is the book of bad improv that works really well, you know? It's like something we're constantly working on. I don't know. So do you guys find yourself kind of pushing yourself outside of the realms of good improv? And then, in what ways do you find yourself typically going toward bad improv on purpose? Now, I put bad in quotes, mm-hmm, right?
Sure,
right.
Breaking the rules.
Breaking the rules hard, you know, meaningfully, purposely.
I don't go through many scenes without that.
Yeah.
it's actually, I do it too much.
We do break the rules pretty frequently, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That scene in particular, I was conscious of doing it. I knew I was doing it.
You weren't doing it to control the scene or because you were scared.
No.
I don't like where he's going with the poker scene. No. I better fix this fucking thing.
And we have talked about this before. And Drew and I check in about this stuff. You know, after shows and blah blah blah. I was aware that his character was existing in the insane world and my character was existing in the sane world. And I knew that he was going to play his character really hard. So that allowed me to fuck with his character. But I also knew that there was a point of diminishing returns where at some point my character is going to have to cave, because the insane character is almost inevitably going to be a stronger willed character than a sane character. And that's exactly what happened in that scene. And eventually we ended up being on the same side.
I have a bad habit and a good habit of responding to a status fight with with a fury.
What does that mean?
Of if someone's going to come in and negate and play high status at the same time, uh-huh. I'm going to accept that negation is true, but come back with high status.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I probably go to that well too much.
That's fascinating.
Well, but this probably goes back to the year of playing together. Hmm. We're pretty used to how each other handles scenes. I mean, we've had those scenes. Those types of situations a number of times at this point, and so navigating that sort of thing felt really comfortable. It didn't feel, I mean, not that I had it planned out exactly how it was going to go or anything like that, and I'm sure you didn't either. But you know, I was not uncomfortable. I wasn't worried at all that scene was going to turn out badly. It was fun and. You know, easy to talk about later. So, but yeah, I think we do break the rules sometimes, you know, like shooting you dead on stage and then letting the scene keep going.
Yay!
that sort of thing. We've done that. We've done some other stuff.
Yeah. There's only so many breakfast conversations we can have about our relationship before we start to say, that was a fine scene as well. Mm-hmm. I think I don't want to see any more of these scenes. You know, like that was another fine scene.
Mm-hmm.
Fine does never keeps me interested in improv.
We're bad boys. We break the rules.
Yeah.
We deserve a Keith Johnstone spanking.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly the sort of an unwritten rule that we probably go against a little bit is we're pretty patient with our work. Probably, I mean, I'm thinking about like the airplane scene.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty uncommonly patient, I think, to have a scene go on that long where so little happens and it's so character driven.
I can only do that when I'm sitting down. I'm going to tell you all about all my Achilles heels. I am patient when seated. Standing up, I can't handle it.
How do you guys handle getting yourself to, like, obviously a strong character, the characters that I like when I watch TV or movies, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When you want to get your character and have a strong point of view, and you want to do it quickly, and you want the audience to see this point of view without being too overt and two-dimensional, how do you make a three-dimensional character with a strong point of view that the audience can relate to?
One thing I've been trying to do is start scenes in media res, in the middle of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So start as if the scene started 45 minutes ago. And so
you're already tired. You just like to start tired.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And so that there's, so I will discover along with everybody else what the backstory is. Like the opening line doesn't necessarily have to establish everything, but it establishes some things, and then can fill in some of the basic stuff after the fact. But that does kind of ground me. It's been working to ground me pretty quickly in what the action of the scene is.
It seems like if you assume that there's backstory, then you can build in both directions instead of getting stuck with, well, now where do I go? Because you've only been thinking forward.
Right. That's kind of the idea. I'm not coming out with a backstory built. I'll just start with a line that makes sense that it's in the middle of something.
Hmm.
I'm rarely attempting to do anything plot driven.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless I'm in a show that's attempting to do that, and then I struggle with it. Truth be told, I'm exposing all of my weaknesses. I think that helps in that regard because that's not where my brain's going. Right, I'm in these moments. It's like, all right, if we've said this, what are some specifics we can layer in? What are some details we can get in there? And if we've gone too far without a justification, what's my or my partner's point of view that's going to bring this together and drive us forward?
I think that we both do this. We're both constantly trying to push forward. Like don't really like to stay where we are, and try to find out where the characters are going, and do that as opposed to just talking about stuff. But I could be wrong.
No, it's always hard, right?
Yeah,
it is hard. How do I, with no props, no mm-hmm. costuming, no coordination with the light booth choreography or backstory, how do I come out on stage, on a blank stage, and then tell you that I am, well, like if we were to use that crappy character from previously who was selling a car, mm-hmm. but he's like, he has these things about, like he's just learning how to, you know, he's learning how to adapt. He's still learning how to adapt to this country, even though he's been here 22 years. Mm-hmm. How do you get all that out without using your words? It's like, I guess you just wind up having to give up and say, I'm not going to do those. I'm just going to let that backstory in my head filter through my actions. And then hopefully whatever the interpretation is with the audience doesn't have to be the interpretation in my head. It probably won't be. But at least the character will be interesting and create that kind of warrant inside everyone else's head.
You know who's the fucking best at that is Chris Hill and Pat Tracy in Polar Bear Centric.
Yeah.
Those two guys snap into it so quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
So quick. Like it's amazing. They both have an ability to get a line in right away or not, and just agree to it and are flying.
Yeah,
they're really good at that.
I totally agree with you. But seeing as how my relationship with Pat Tracy is that I always throw him under the bus, and I hope he's hearing this. I would just like to say that Pat Tracy is the worst improviser in the world. So that's it. Other than that, that's okay. Just letting everyone else know, Pat Tracy is a terrible human being. It's all right. Good.
I was thinking one way that you guys go deeper into a character is you'll see that same character interact with different people, and then people interact with people differently. Like you interact with your mother differently than your best friend, and you kind of expose deeper parts of the character through that method. Is that?
The work play home dynamic. We certainly play with that. I have another duo that I work with. I do Jordan, and I do the pitch. We actually have a form, and that hits that even harder. It's intentionally trying to show those different aspects of the character, and that certainly comes through in what we're doing too. Sorry, Matt.
No, that's fine. I don't think that was conscious.
No, with us, I don't think it was. I meant with the pitch, it was.
Right. But I know for me, and we've talked about trying to figure out ways to get our characters to move locations and things like that, especially after working with like the Three for All guys, mm-hmm. About the idea of not staying in one stayed place or whatever. I think that that's a kind of a natural evolution for us, is to bring the characters back in new settings and discover them a little bit more.
Eric, weren't you talking about Three for All last night? Didn't you say they're just a trundle box full of tricks and they're no talent hacks?
I say a lot of shit about improvisers. I think you can all figure this out.
Quite the opposite.
I tell you what, which is also the segment of the show where you write in and I, to the improviser, you would like me to skewer and I will tell them and I'll describe them in the worst possible ways. Now, just to be known, I don't even have to know who this improviser is. You can just give me the name, and I will say something horribly terrible about them. So that's.
I did that in real life once. It was an amazing experience. This was in college, mm-hmm. and I'd been drinking too much, and I not too much actually. This I don't want to pin it on drunkenness because it wasn't. It was actually probably more like a 2-beer buzz. It became a fun game, and it was. I will tell you honestly what I don't like about you. And did this. This is a big group of people, and the entire table. I did it, and I was totally honest every time. It was everyone was laughing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure a few people were like, oh man, geez, I'm annoying. Yeah. But it was weird. I've never done anything like that ever again.
Wow. You were drunk?
Not drunk, but like I think we were all out at a big group at a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
And I probably had two beers.
That is my ongoing joke about the wedding speech I keep saying I'm going to give at everyone's wedding. You know? So we got a lot of shit to get through. Seriously, it's great that, you know, Pat and Linda are getting married.
Pat Tracy, right?
Yeah, Pat Tracy. Exactly. It's fucking Pat Tracy and Linda getting married. But seriously, you got a lot of shit to talk about, you guys. First of all, Roger. You know what your problem is? And that's how I start everything off. You know what your problem is?
I think in this case it helped because I didn't know. It was acquaintances out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like I was there with my family. That, you know, that's a whole different level.
Oh my God,
of knowing,
yeah.
Or at a wedding. So it was like, oh man, I hate that you're always late. You like that kind of thing. Where it's true, but that's as deep as my relationship with that person
was. Right. I don't like that one little eyebrow that kind of comes, a little hair on your eyebrow that just keeps wanting to try and get away.
Spock brow.
Yeah, your Spock brow. Just freaks me out. Yeah, see, that's easier to handle. You're like, oh, I'll pluck that, you know.
Honestly, like, that's fun. When I got married, my bachelor party, another drunken one. This was real drunk. But the main event, if you will, was all of my friends and brothers roasting me. It was amazing.
Nice.
Oh, like, really? Like, and my brothers have a lot of personal stuff to layer in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, like, their
Where's the video of
stuff
that?
Was killing. I don't know if it was videotaped or not. I don't know. But it was, like, if you're looking for something to do in that situation, it's good. Like, this is your opportunity to use all of your ammo.
Oh, man. That's funny.
And I give people lots of ammo.
Well, it seems like it's the part of the show where we're going to throw it over for a brand new segment, which is going to be, I'm going to ask you, would you like to do Philip's Corner featuring Eric or Eric's Corner?
I think it would be Eric's Corner, because I can no way I could do Philip. There's no way I could do Philip. I have the question.
Okay, well, let's throw it to Eric's Corner!
Eric's Corner is a little different. I don't have any awkward questions for you. I just have one question that both of you answer. So, okay. Who wants to go first?
Me.
Okay. I don't know if I've asked you this or not, but I like this question. Mm-hmm. You are supposed to give a TED Talk. You got, of the 20 TED Talks in your brain, what's one of them?
This is a real, TED Talk?
Yeah, a real TED Talk. Well, yeah, a real TED Talk. We're not expecting a lot. It doesn't have to be something where you know a lot about the subject. It's just something that's scheduled out there. You could figure out if you
want to. So it's not. It doesn't have to be one of the things I'm closest.
Yeah, and it's not improv. That's the other rule. It's not improv. So you can't fucking talk about improv. You got to talk about something that you talk at length at. What is it?
The first thing that just popped into my head right there, the joy of Wikipedia holes. I personally love getting lost in Wikipedia. And when I say Wikipedia hole, it means I'm reading a book or I see something. I go, oh, I need to look that up.
Yeah.
And I go, oh.
Like a rabbit hole only.
Oh, I see. That's what Bastille Day is all about. But Wikipedia is full of links. And then you click into that one and then you learn something else. And you click into that one. And I'm making a mental note like, okay, I'm going to read this, but I need to do two clicks back because I'm not quite – I didn't learn fully about Napoleon yet and I need to learn more about that. But now I'm gone and I think I could talk at length on that.
I love Wikipedia. Now I'm very curious. What are you – What would the TED Talk be about? Just like, this is what I do. It's fun. And then just leave.
Well, I think stage. I would want to encourage people to do it. I don't know. I mean, I think that's Wikipedia is one of the most trafficked websites. And I think there's plenty of people who do that already. I'm guessing several people in this room do. Yeah. But I think there's lots of other people who, when they need to do a time suck, I think Wikipedia should be used as a time suck over social networking.
Over Angry Birds.
Correct.
Yeah,
I think agree. It would be a better use of the world's time if we all had on our home screen a little Wikipedia entry point.
Right.
And it just took you someplace random and you clicked into that. Versus whatever your current time. By the way, I'm not so pretentious that I do this already.
No,
but I should.
And you're learning something more about the world. One of the things I like about the Google homepage, it changes all the time. You're like the last one was Grace Hopper, and I'm like, oh right, I always hear about Grace Hopper, and I looked at it, which is really important because I'm a computer programmer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, holy crap, that chick did a lot of stuff. You know? Yeah. So, like, I didn't realize all the stuff that that chick. She's a rear admiral in the Navy, for God's sakes, you know. Yeah, she died like 10 years ago. But, you know, you find out these things and you just, and you really, I think it gives you, like, we all have the ability to have facts in our life, but to have perspective is this is divine, right? Facts are everywhere, but perspective is what's divine about it. Otherwise, you wind up, coming to the wrong conclusions.
Totally.
What? I've been bathing. You know, find out that soap is glycolic acid, and you're like, what? I've been bathing my kid in acid. You know, like, all right, perspective here, perspective. So, bad example, but you get the idea.
Right.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And maybe you, maybe your TED Talk would have the effects of Wikipedia on the people who follow Wikipedia holes and on like their mental state, their...
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just time to come up with stuff.
Yeah, I'll work out the edges of it. I feel like we're all so currently into the cutting edge of what's happening right now. Like, that's what Twitter is. How do you find out things immediately? That there's so much more. Like, a lot has happened, and we ignore most history, even recent history, in favor of the ultra now.
Recentism, yes. Yeah.
And I get that. I do it myself.
Yeah, man.
Anyway.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. You have plenty of time to think of something. It better be fucking good, McLeod.
I got nothing.
No, you're in Eric's corner now. It's an octagon.
So what TED Talk would I do?
Yeah. What TED Talk would you do? What was something you would?
I would do one. So this can be based,
one of your 20,
based
one of your
off 20, of a TED Talk that I've seen. Is that fine? Or do you want...
Sure.
You're going to plagiarize?
Sure, but it's something... Yeah, you're just going to rear off somebody else's TED Talk.
Oh, okay.
So if we can plagiarize, I want to change...
No,
that's what I thought you were asking originally.
No, fuck that.
My TED Talk is being a better you.
I've approached you. I'm from the TED Talk agency. Oh. I've approached you. You have... Also, there's like 20 things you probably think about.
First, I want to pimp the one that I did, that I was going to talk about, because it was one that I saw that was... phenomenal.
Yeah, please.
So I'm going to pimp that first, then I'll talk about answering the actual question. There was one that Amanda Plummer did.
Really?
Yeah, on the power of asking. And it's really phenomenal. And it's just about how few people actually ask for what they want from other people. And about how if you imagine that someone will... say no, ask anyway, and how you will be shocked at the results of that, particularly with regards to people that you think are like don't know who you are or above your station or you know whatever or might be like mildly famous or something like that. If you want to like get to know them professionally and you want to take them out for lunch, ask them. And it's shocking how often people will say yes. And after I watched that and I started doing that, it is amazing how often people say yes.
Wow.
So it is a really good one to watch. And there's more to it than that, but that was my big takeaway.
Amanda Plummer... teaching anything on or doing a thing on asking.
Yeah.
All I can think of is just this creepy lady.
Honey
just
bunny?
Asking. Yeah. All I can think of is this creepy lady just asking people for all kinds of awkward things. Hey, I'm homeless for now. Can I stay in your house for a little bit? I'm going to do some crack if that's okay. You know, obviously not on crack. Amanda Plummer's not on crack. Oh, wait, hold on. This goes against everything I've been doing. Amanda Plummer totally does crack, and she's a terrible human being. So, there. But yeah, that's interesting. That's really fascinating.
Yeah.
Putting people on the spot. I've got to see this TED Talk now. Sorry.
It's really quite good. So, what's something that I would do a TED Talk on?
Actually, I like the Amanda Plummer thing simply because it really goes along with one of my basic philosophies in life, which is you can do anything you want to in this life, not necessarily because you're so talented, but because the world is simply too lazy to stop you. Yeah. And it is. It's just too lazy to stop you. You'd have to have, like, if Phil wanted to stop you, you'd have to put time and effort and, you know, you know, all kinds of energy that he doesn't have.
And I think that people do appreciate energy. Like, if you're putting enthusiasm, in effort and energy, energy, effort, and enthusiasm, they appreciate that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so something that I would do, I would do a TED Talk on how many choices people get to make on a daily basis and how many times they acquiesce the choices to not make them actually count, and to implore people to actually make the choices that they get to make count. Because many times choices are taken away from us for one reason or another. But that if you are actually in a situation where you have a choice, make it count. And so it can be small, it can be big, but if you actually put time and thought into what your choices are, then your life, I think, will dramatically improve, and it will happen sooner rather than later.
That's fascinating. This is the other thing I like about this question. I wound up finding out things that I want to take everyone out to dinner and explore. Like, everyone I've asked have been like, really? You believe in that? That's bizarre. Let's fucking talk about this, you know? So that could be his own show. Sorry, Eric's corner is taking up too much time.
I want to see that TED Talk.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, because so much of my life is dumb luck and absence of choice happening to work out because of situation, and how much other things could have happened had I actually made an active choice at times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not complaining about my life.
No. I understand. I totally know what you mean.
It's stunning that it's actually worked out halfway decent, considering how little I've done that.
Yeah. And the thing is that most people, when I ask these questions, say, I'm still astounded by how like wow, that is a really good thing, and in a way I've never thought of it before. And we keep forgetting that, like, that's why each of us is his own improviser. None of us will, there'll never another be another Matthew McLeod as an improviser, or Drew Kirsten, or Eric Heiber. There'll be plenty of Phils, but you know, that, like, Phil's a fucking hack, and he's a terrible person.
White guys in a Cub hat improvising,
dime a dozen, buddy. But like, you wind up seeing these things, and everyone I've talked to about this, there have been people who've had a hard time trying to figure out what their TED Talk would be. But usually, when they come down with something, it's usually not something boring like I don't know, tinfoil, you know, and then they'll just walk. I'm tinfoil. I don't know. I mean, they really have something. That's actually like that is oblique to my own personal experience, and I wouldn't have thought about it as much if now you want to know.
They're not all that way. I mean,
no, they're not.
I think if we went to the TED conference and we looked at the schedule and one was Wikipedia polls, I think some people would sneak away to the pool during that one.
Oh no, I agree. I'm not saying they're TED worthy. We'll just call them Fred worthy. In fact, I should just call them what's your Fred talk. And Fred talk is like an average everyday assholes just giving their own personal philosophy about
stuff. Any gestures at me.
Oh, totally. Yeah. No, I pointed directly at you with my middle finger. I just want to point that out. Right. Fucking McLeod.
Right. And terrible in his other hand, which is British, pointed with the two fingers.
Yeah. Well, all right. That's it.
That was Eric's fantastic, octagon. You guys. It was Eric's octagon. I'm sorry. I misspoke earlier.
Yeah. The octagon of pain. And some laughter.
Great. That has been Eric's octagon. Yeah. You guys ready for some improv?
Yes, I am.
Next at bat. Next at
bat! Right, Hansborough. I'm glad you came on in.
Well, I got all of your texts. I couldn't put it off any longer, Marky.
Marky? You go to college for 1 year and you're gonna start sassing me?
I'm sorry, Mr. Marky.
It's just that getting a tear in my eye right now. I thought maybe I'd been married to your ma long enough that you might call me Pa.
Look, I learned a lot of things at college, Marky. First of all, how biology works. Turns out I'm not in debt to love you because you're not my real father.
You learned that in biology?
Yep, it was biology for stepsons.
They offer that at UK?
That's right. It's a lot of broken homes going to that school, so they added that to the curriculum. It's required.
That was one of the reasons we wanted to go you. We wanted to go you there.
You know what else I learned in English class? That's not a right way to say anything. Go you there, Marky? Are you kidding me? What college did you go to?
Welcome to the UK. For those of you, your first time, you're having a, this is biology for stepsons, you know, because, fucking stepfathers, am I right, guys, right?
Yeah.
Fucking shit, God.
I heard this class is supposed to be easy.
Right.
Right. Like your mom.
Good
one. That's my mom.
Your stepmom.
All right. Simmer down there. First off, we're going to teach you about, you know, going you there about learning. So, stepsons, we tend to be a little lazier, and that's good because when we ask things in the way, we state things in the way where it sounds like a question, it infuriates our stepfathers, and maybe they'll get back with our real dads, am I right? Yeah, so that we can finally have a home again, you know what I mean? All right.
Hansburgh, I guess I just thought the school was more progressive than that. They don't let girls go to that class?
It's all stepsons. They have a stepdaughter division over in the other county over, but we don't mix. No. Except for the mixers. There are the mixers. We mix at the mixers. Marky, come on.
It's just that me and your mother we're just so proud of you. You asked me before, you know, where I went to school, where I got my learned. It didn't.
I'm going to let that one slide, Marky.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. You didn't go to college?
Nope. I went straight on into the sulfur mine.
Where you met my mother.
Yep. She was the prettiest HR lady. Tell you what, she just sat there, and every Friday I looked forward to the moment when I could get my time card and hand it to her, and she'd sign it and hand me an envelope.
All right, Jonah. We have a big line here. A lot of you have gotten in trouble here at the sulfur mine. Oh, no, Bradley, you melted your hand there. How did you do that?
Well, I was reaching in to get the sulfur, and I forgot to
never reach in to get the sulfur.
I thought that I had my gloves on.
Oh, God, Bradley, you have to have your gloves on in the sulfur mines. Bradley, where's your oxygen mask?
The oxygen mask?
Oh, Bradley, God. You know what? Bradley, just move over here to the nurse's station. I've got to get more people in the line here. HR's very busy today. Good Lord.
I get winded when I walk.
Oh, Bradley, you're such a mess. I don't know how you're going to survive here in the sulfur mine. This is probably one of the most noxious places on the planet. And Mr. Cooperstein is a very, very tough tyrant when it comes to making money, so...
I slept through the video presentation at the beginning of my orientation.
Bradley, yes? You sweet, sweet, sweet child.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice. I'm slightly winded from getting slapped in the face, though, now.
Bradley, you're just going to die. I just know it. And I'm going to feel bad for a few days. This is terrible. I hate it when people like you die in the sulfur mines.
I don't want to die.
Hansburgh just tore me up when your dad left, and I told him I'd help you and your ma get through it, and I turned into more than that, and I apologize.
You know what I found out in stepson history? That's not a common situation at all.
What do you mean?
It's kind of odd. I've been talking to other stepsons. It's odd that you and my dad were best friends and he decided to leave and you just filled right in. That happens only in the Bible, I found out. That is some Bible shit where the brother steps in. That is bizarre, Marky Mark.
Well, I guess maybe it's you asked me if I went to schooling once, and if I did get to school, and it was certainly in... At First Methodist. I tell you what, I've got memories of being at First Methodist, and just the smell of the books and the sweet songs coming out of the pipe organ. And we'd have a time like you wouldn't understand. You wouldn't understood it.
Running down these halls at First Methodist, I don't think I've ever had so much fun.
Yeah, this is a really good time. Just you and me, a couple of 8-year-olds, having a Sunday.
That's right. Boy, I can't wait till my voice sounds like yours.
Oh, it's on account of I've been working in the mines since before I can remember.
The sulfur mines?
Yep.
I'm too short.
Oh, you couldn't walk under the stick?
No. Hey, look, I'm going to run with scissors.
Careful, they see you running with those scissors, they'll get you down to the drapery.
Oh no, that's a very good point. Gosh, I love learning here. It's so nice and warm.
Hey, what did you make of that benediction?
I think that was one of the more provocative talks that we've had in a really long time. It really made me think, because I would never think like that. That sort of oblique way of thinking that the priest did for us, it really made me think a lot.
What?
The talk, the benediction.
Kill that organ music. We got a Catholic in our midst.
All right. So come on in. You want to sell a fucking car, huh? Hey, why are you laughing at me, huh? Listen, this is my best sales pitch. Jesus Christ, you other salespeople are a fucking asshole.
Hey, buddy, you're in America now. Speak American.
This is American. I've fucking been here 22 years. Jesus Christ.
If you've been in America for 22 years, name your favorite sport.
Oh, fucking, I don't fucking know. Sports, cricket. We play cricket where I come from.
Freaking American sport.
No. Let him get to it, guys. Hey, if I were... I mean, we're all salespeople here, but where do I put my falafel in this Toyota?
The fucking falafel! Falafel is enemy of my fucking country. What the fuck, man? Jesus Christ, you don't know anything about my country. Okay, listen, fine. You know, whatever. I'm just here to sell Dodge fucking Durangos to fucking consumer who comes in here.
Whoa, wait, you have Durangos in stock?
Yes, we have the fucking Durangos
what?
In stock.
Jerry! Jerry! No, Jerry!
Nobody has Durangos in stock.
We had Durangos in stock. I didn't get that memo.
Yes, we got them. They have Durangos in stock in the fucking backyard. Apparently, now Mr. Cooperstown, who also owns this fucking lot... also has decided to negotiate the thing with the police department, so the impound lot now is shipping over all these shitty cars.
We're sorry for making fun of your accent, then. We'd like 3 Durangos, please.
What the fuck are you doing, yeah. Durangos? You went to buy Durango from another salesman.
Listen, you're going to get us those Durangos, and you are not going to ship them back to your country to be filled up with nitrous oxide and crashed into a mosque.
Son of a bitch. All right. Looks like you've been reading my diary. Fine. It was a shitty idea anyway. I draw little cartoon drawings of Durangos with gasoline smashing into mosque.
And it was one of those flip cartoons.
Yes, I thought it was good. I don't know how to plan these fucking things.
It was good. It was too good.
Oh, get that. It was shitty. I don't know what I'm doing.
You know how I knew you were off? You said you were going to kill the priest in that mosque real good.
Ah, he's going to kill him so good. Oh, he's such an asshole. If you know this guy, you would want... And the thing is, this is not for religion. I just want to let you know. Not for religion. I want to kill this guy because he's a dick. And everybody he talks to turns into a fucking dick. And I just... you know what? It makes me crazy. You wouldn't understand. You've never had to worry about having to work with a dick.
Baby, how was it work?
Ah, it's fine. The people in the sales office, they come on the... They make fun of me in the break room.
Oh, no.
I don't want to learn how to do American football. I don't want to learn how to talk.
Daddy, Daddy, did you bring any food home?
Schmelmel, we did bring food. Here, I brought you something. We're going to try something different.
Oh, it's just rice. It's just plain white rice.
I'm starting out learning how to be American, so... White rice is where we start. It's the intersection of our peoples.
I will eat it, but I will be hungry again in half an hour.
I know. Rice is shitty, right? Don't tell your mother.
Okay.
Papa.
Yes?
Did you maybe get to go to the Chipotle, and did you maybe save a little bit of the rice with the cilantros in it for me to eat?
I told you we would never go back to Chipotle. Never! Never be assimilated into this fucking country.
I know we can't go as a family, but I know you get to go to your car salesman lunches. And I thought, maybe, Papa, did you have a pot belly? And did you save me a little bit of pot belly lettuce?
Olga, why you bother Papa so much?
Family, it is prayer time. Everyone get on mat, face Jesus, and pray to the Lord.
All right, come on. We pray to Jesus now. Come on. Look at him looking down with your judgmental eyes.
I pray to Jesus to smite Olga's tongue because she talks back to Papa too much.
Okay, I know that sounds wrong, but you know what? It's probably what Americans do, so whatever. Olga, sorry, Jesus is going to smite your tongue.
Hey, what are you doing out at the bar tonight? Trouble at home?
Oh, man, I can't even fucking tell you. This is, God, just, hey, pour me some Southern comfort, huh? Like, you know, I feel like every day I try and struggle away from American culture. It just sucks me back in, you know?
One SoCo.
Oh, my God, this is good. Holy God. You know, I like this country.
Did you just slurp a SoCo?
Yes, you know, slurp SoCo.
No, he's... look, I'm having a Coke right now. That's how you drink a Coke. SoCo you enjoy.
I have no idea what you just fucking did. What is the difference?
I'll pour you another SoCo.
Alright, fine, that's fine. I'll finish with this one anyway. Shit. Alright.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? What the fuck?
How are you enjoying the bourbon?
I'm fucking good. It's black fucking bourbon. You just put it in your mouth and then you drink it down. What the fuck? You do something different in America?
Yeah, we enjoy the bourbon, not a mouthful of air.
What the fucking... God damn it, there's so many fucking roads in this fucking country.
I'm going to pour you another one.
Oh, hey, Bartender Joe. Are you guys enjoying yourself some Southern comfort?
We're trying to.
Apparently I'm doing it wrong.
I would like to get one myself.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, let's see how this redneck does
it. All right.
What the fuck? It just looks like a commercial. Okay, I do the same thing. I do the fucking same thing. Look, watch. Pour me another. Okay. This is good. Here we go.
What?
It's the fucking same thing. It's the fucking same thing. Fucking same thing as this dumb shit
what
over here.
What the hell are you doing to that Southern comfort?
Okay, listen to me, Gomer Pyle. I did the fucking same thing as you did, okay?
If I handed you a Dorito right now.
Sure.
Would you bite into it?
Of course.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? I can't get it.
You place the entire Dorito into your mouth
and then you bite it down.
That sounds fucking dangerous. Why would I do that to myself?
When you bite into a hamburger.
Yes.
How do you do it?
I open my mouth and I put the hamburger in and I fucking bite down and then I swallow. What the fuck?
Well, you should be smiling when you bite into a hamburger.
God damn it, I'm not on a fucking commercial. What the fuck is the matter with all you people?
When you drink a Coke, do you tilt your head back?
No, and I don't tell you what else I don't do. After I go ahead and drink it, I don't go, really fucking stupid like that. I just drink the fucking Coke because I'm thirsty. Motherfucker!
That's why people think you're an asshole.
Really?
And you haven't assimilated yet.
Fuck, I try so hard. I really try. Fuck, I'm a fucking failure.
Hey guys! I was just in the pantry, and we have 2 jars of peanut butter.
Superfluous peanut butter. This is a dream come true.
2 jars?
I'm like, it's like the peanut butter gods have smiled on us this day.
It's like, why did I join this frat? Because of the peanut butter?
No, I don't want to get everyone excited, but there's a situation on our hands. Both jars are currently open.
Oh!
Oh, shit.
That is just a beckoning for us to just have another peanut butter party.
I thought you wouldn't mention it, but I went ahead and placed a few texts to some notable sororities and told them that they better bring some jelly.
We should also see if the chocolate sorority can come. I've been meaning to mix it up with those girls.
Well, we're going to have to make a choice. Do we want jelly or do we want chocolate? Those two don't mix well with peanut butter. Together.
Oh, stop scratching the blackboard!
So, you frat boys, think a peanut butter party is going to make you real men? Well, I got something to say. I've been in this frat for a long time, and you fucking kids have thrown it into the garbage. Peanut butter party. When I was your age, I was drinking alcohol out of some girl's vagina. What the fuck?
It's one-eyed Sammy. I've heard legends, but I didn't know he actually lived in the walls.
I live in the attic.
I've been here for 15 years while you made this fraternity house a pile of shit.
It's a good time, though. We have sorority girls over, and we get a big old loaf of bread.
And then you play Jenga, what the fuck?
We have pizza parties and watch movies. We love Pixar.
And not one of you got your dick wet. Listen, when my day...
I took a shower.
No, damn it, that's not the same thing.
So one time I'd gotten out of the shower, and I washed my hands, and the water came out with... Oh, God! Oh,
that doesn't count when one time... Oh.
I brought this chalkboard down just so I could torment you little fucks. What the hell has gone wrong with this damn fraternity?
We're just living our dreams, Sam.
It's just good, clean college fun.
Hey, can someone pass me another high C?
No.
I'm thirsty.
Here you go, Danny. Yeah,
oh. Get that high C out of your fucking face. If I see another high C in this goddamn frat house, I swear to God
I'll murder. But what else are we supposed to drink then?
I'm going to skull fuck the next person who drinks a high C. Is that clear?
Look, Sam, when we were kids... And we were like, when I move out of my parents' house, I'm going to join a fraternity. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to eat peanut butter jelly sandwiches every day.
Every day.
High C every night and bedtime after 10 o'clock. Okay? Now we're living our dream because our parents can't put us down anymore, especially not my stepdad.
You're drinking a high C. He just said he's going to skull.
It's a juicy juice.
Is there a juicy juice contingency? Is that okay right now?
Ow, my ear. Ow, my ear.
This. That. That. Do it!
Oh. God, you're just like my stepdad. He told me, stop, girl, eat a grown-up sandwich, he said. Put some goddamn meat in there, he said. I said, no, peanut butter and jelly. He said, drink beer like a man. I said, no, juice.
Maybe your stepdad just loved you and wanted to make sure that you're care of yourself. He wasn't trying to be mean. He's just trying to teach you a fucking lesson, man. Maybe you just heard, think about that,
it's not,
huh?
It's not what we learned here.
That's not what you learned?
No.
Maybe you need to go home and tell your stepfather that you love him. You put your arms around him and hug him tight. Wait, because you don't know how long he's going to be there.
His eye patch is coming loose from tears.
No, that ain't tears. That's sweat. It's... I'm going to go back into the attic. I think I forgot something. I got to take a shit or something. Bye.
Stepdad Sam? God.
Your stepdad only has one arm?
One arm and one eye and one leg. But he compensates by stepping twice as much, so it sounds like two. Wow.
Huh.
I thought I was a terrible stepson because not only did I drive my original father away, but then I haven't seen my stepdad in 15 years either. Turns out he was with me all along.
It's me, your original daddy.
Oh my God.
And it also turns out that your stepdad skull fucked our frat mate. That's not okay.
He's known to do that. That's how he lost half of his body.
Is that kind of your way to justify that action of skull fucking or?
You know, you just get used to people's quirks, I guess.
What?
My brain hurts.
Oh, oh God! Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know how to get other people's attention. That's just how I do it. So
we should get rid of that chalkboard.
No. Well, let wean me off. Eventually, I'll learn. Just, you know, one day it'll start being chalkboard. Next thing, it'll just be a hymn or something.
Oh, God damn it. He has a tinfoil in his hand.
All right, no. Look, I just... It's all I had upstairs, tinfoil. Thought maybe we could make a casserole or something. I realize I'm being a little hard on you, especially that kid over there. He's bleeding out his ear.
Real hard on him.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I get it. Like, maybe I can change. Maybe I need to not be such an asshole. Maybe casseroles are fun. Fuck, I don't know.
The semen's dripping out of my other ear.
Just, you know what? All right. I got the tinfoil. Just put some tinfoil in.
How did you come so quickly?
I just do. I've been doing this a long time. God damn it. Just put the tinfoil in your ear.
I mean, I guess I should be glad that you didn't go a long time, but it's...
God damn it.
You always say in your day you'd go all night long with all the sororities, and I don't know if it's true.
Okay, that's right. I'm 62 years old, all right?
Shouldn't that make it go longer?
No, okay, that doesn't... You guys don't know shit about shit.
Do you use pharmaceutical enhancements?
You are making me fucking crazy. Because
if you did, it might work a little better.
I'm going to knock all your heads together like a goddamn Three Stooges movie if you don't shut the fuck up right now and let's make a fucking casserole. I'm trying to meet you halfway here, you assholes.
How would you do that with only one arm?
Fucking God. Listen, I manage, right? Manage to do things. I did things beside my, in spite of my impediments. I did great things when I was here. I think you guys can too, but maybe great things are making a cap.
Sounds like he believes in us.
Sherry, I stole a panda.
Oh, God. You stole a panda? Wow. To work here in the sulfur mines.
Yeah.
It's
just that I know they're endangered, and I shouldn't have brought it down here to the mine.
God, oh jeez, yeah.
But I didn't know what else to do.
Right? No, I understand. Yeah. It's terrible.
Remember when the Chinese circus came through town?
Oh God, and those were lovely.
They were making those. They had that panda dressed up with a dress on.
What was his name? No, they called him Lucy Liu, and it was purely a male panda, but they called him Lucy Liu, and I thought, wow, that's racist and non-topical at the same time.
I just call him Lulu now.
There he is. Yeah, he's struggling to breathe. This is not good.
Well, I guess I should admit something else, too. What? I took the afternoon off to go catch a picture, and I had Lulu do my work in the mine.
Oh, you can't let Mr. Cooperstown hear that, sweetheart. I've got a cover for you here. This is bad news. If Mr. Cooperstown, you saw what happened the last time Mr. Cooperstown saw somebody leave early so they could pick their kids up from daycare.
Yeah. It was ugly.
Yeah, it was really ugly. He beat the shit out of them with a purple dildo. It was really, really ugly. In front of everybody. Dragged him out of his car and beat the crap out of him with a giant purple dildo.
Did you ever get your dildo back?
No. He just takes things. He doesn't understand.
He wouldn't even want to use it anymore at that point.
No, he's just very privileged, and he sees something, he takes it. It's the kind of man Mr. Cooperston is.
Surprise inspection.
Oh, shit.
Time for a Cooper inspection.
Mr. Cooperson, we're about to take the panda back. It's not really some part of the sulfur mine.
Where's this panda's respiratory device? Why is this panda not wearing its sulfur protecting gloves?
He's just not.
This panda is not up to code.
It's not in the system yet. So I'm sorry, Mr. Cooperson.
But just to be clear, Mr. C. Coop, sorry.
Cooperston, please.
Scott, don't do that.
I guess. You're not mad that there's a panda here, just that he's has a couple of grade one violations.
If OSHA comes down here right now and sees this panda without the proper footwear, they could shut this damn sulfur mine down.
OSHA God. Here. It's a surprise inspection.
Quick, panda, get these booties on.
Properly attire this goddamn panda right now.
Hello. Excuse me, what's that over there? Is that a panda?
It's a properly protected panda.
It is. His little respiratory mask. There he goes. He's struggling to breathe.
Oh, look at that. He is dying behind that mask. What is going on here?
It's because I accidentally fed him sugar cane instead of bamboo. He'll be fine. God.
That is not a work-related incident.
It is not, but that is animal cruelty, and it states right here in your contract that you may not harm any animals in a sulfur mine.
Oh, no. Mr. Cooperstown, don't lose it. Just calm down.
Your skin is changing color, sir.
Cooper Man!
Get the panda, go!
Bones protruding
sulfur
from his shoulders.
Man! Cooper Man! You went to movie instead of work afternoon. Cooper Crush Skull.
Oh, Coop, what are you doing at the bar? Bad day at work?
God, you would not believe it.
Oh, these fucking guys, right? These fucking people in the fucking mines.
Can I get a SoCo for crap's sake over here?
All right, let's see how this motherfucker does it.
Yeah, I'd like a SoCo too.
Okay, now I see what you're talking about. That's a man drinking a fucking soca right there. I get it now. That makes sense.
Hey, speak American, buddy. Jesus Christ.
You fucking racist.
Don't start with me. Don't. I've had a hell of a day. I crushed so many employees today.
Oh, fucking shit, man. American capitalism is a fucking nuanced business, huh?
You're telling me you can't even keep the pandas tired correctly anymore. It's just a mess every day.
Hey, we've all got our problems. My stepson doesn't love me.
Oh, man, that's rough.
I came here because I thought I could drink him away.
What's it? What's your fucking stepson? Hennessy?
Hensborough.
Fucking Hensborough.
No,
right?
Great piece of shit, I bet.
Piece of shit. You should learn to love your father.
No,
huh?
No. He's a great son.
Ah, fucking stepson, huh?
No. No, I started calling him son right away. I think that's where I went off the rails.
You did somebody say my name? Dad.
Oh, look at this bastard.
Oh, is it fucking Hensborough? Yeah, is this fucking Hensborough?
Is this your stepson?
Yeah.
You know what? When I tell my wife, when I tell my D, I say, listen, if I ever died, never remarry. Just fucking burn yourself and the children. So spare them the fucking insult of a stepfather, huh? Huh?
Dad, you and I might have had some terrible words with each other last time we saw each other. But then...
I worded you real good. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, you did. Normally I'd make fun of you for that, but I'm not going to today. Because one of my friends at the frat house got fucked in the ear by a stranger who was another person's stepdad. And it really put things in perspective for me. And you know what? You're not half bad, stepdad, Dad.
Oh, shit. I think I'm going to fucking cry. I need another soak.
Cooper, sad.
Cooper, don't be sad. Come here, buddy. We're going to get through this together. That's fucking touching. That's like Lifetime original God. Movie shit. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm going to go home and tell my kids I fucking love them right now. Okay.
Papa!
Papa!
Come on, children. I'm so sorry. We're going to go to Chipotle. We're going to eat all the burritos.
Oh, yeah, Papa!
Jesus answered our prayers.
Jesus answered the fucking prayers. Come in.
Jesus answered my prayer too. Olga, tongue fall out.
And you know, Madi, you don't have to burn yourself and the children if I ever die in some horrible accident. Papa, you can get remarried, huh?
Papa, but I'm not hungry for Chipotle because since you left, Mama found new man and he brought me Taco Bell.
What the fuck? He just moved that fucking gone to one hour. What the fuck?
Hey, I'm stepdad Chet.
Chet brought a six-pack and pound.
What the fuck is this?
That's right.
Chet made sure that the taco shells were nacho cheese.
Is that what you're saying? Chet or shit? What are you saying? Chet. This is the man is shit. You got the man whose man's name is Chet.
Chet brought me new Miley Cyrus album.
Talk American, bro. Look, I've made sure that they all got nacho and Cool Ranch tacos.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Chet.
You're welcome, girl whose name I don't know how to pronounce yet and probably will never...
Put on school for that.
I'm going to go with BB.
Listen, we're into this negotiation, all right? I said I want to buy a Toyota, and I would prefer a Camry. And you're still trying to get me into a Corolla. I don't need a Corolla.
I don't fucking know, man. You ever have the fucking time? You go home, you get frustrated with America, and you go home to the fucking bartender, and next thing you know, you drink SoCo, and you come home, and your wife is already fucking some dude named Shit. What the fuck, man? Has that ever happened to you? Is this what America's like? Just buy the Corolla, man. Just buy the fucking Corolla.
Life is a shit sandwich, but I need a sensible automobile for my longer commute. And I don't have... I don't need a bigger car. A Camry will do me.
You know, you probably don't need a bigger car because you'll probably never get married and have children and learn to wait for them until they fucking stab you in the fucking back. You know what? You're right. Get the small car. Get a small car. Get some sensible shit. Do whatever makes you happy, okay? Live for me. Live.
I wasn't thinking about the future. Maybe I should have a look, just a look at that Corolla.
Okay, just take the Corolla.
Maybe I'll just kick the tires.
Okay.
You have some alternate sales techniques.
I sure do. Still have it. Self high five.
Restart the. That was
awesome.
We did a real nice clover leaf.
Yeah, we did.
That was awesome.
I love how you guys all laugh when I go, they fucking shifted, they fucking... It's blatantly bringing the same guy back in time. Just made up an interview. It's blatant.
And that was a real thematic exploration of work, play,
home. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, I didn't even think about.
The first time I did, then it just kept happening.
But at our party. Next up, Pat!
And that's our show. Thank you so very much to Drew and Matt for coming in and playing with us. Matt was already here, obviously, but thanks for staying.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Matt. You can see Drew and Matt, the show, on Wednesdays at Huge Theater, 31st and Lindale. That show is at 8 o'clock on Wednesdays in January and February. A special show on January 1st, because Drew can't be there, it will be Matt and Friends. Also, check them out on their Facebook page, facebook.com/DrewandMatt.
And I'm Eric Heiberg, the special guest taking over for Philip Simondet today on the Eric's Octagon. Please come out to Huge Theater for Throwback Night, which is 8 p.m. on Friday nights all the way through the end of December. And also, check out Comedy Sports. It's actually kind of fun. We play it. Philip Simondet will be playing it soon enough.
That's right. Soon enough.
Yeah, soon enough. And it's a lot of fun. Good, clean fun. Probably not as much skull fucking as you heard on this podcast. Yes. But you never know. It's Comedy Sports. So. That's it. Also, check out the Next Bat podcast, which you can get at iTunes and probably some other URLs and shit. And that's me getting out for being the sidekick at Next Bat.
Yeah! You can see me at Comedy Sports eventually, like Eric said. Also, this weekend, I'll be improvising the third act in the Holiday Mixtape at the Brave New Workshop Student Union show. That's the Holiday Mixtape is it's a collection of old and new sketches that they're putting on. And then the third act, they asked a bunch of Friday Night Stage Match regulars to come and improvise. I'm up on December 21st, Saturday. And actually, I might also be up on Friday, but I haven't confirmed that. Then on Sunday, you can see Matt and I and a couple shortcakes in our last cake batter show, which is us.
And Liz Losey and Mary Mangan from yes. Shortcakes. Janelle Blaisdell can't be there that night, unfortunately. But we love Michelle. Michelle Blaisdell is a terrible person. We hate her, and she's terrible at improv.
Fuck you, Michelle. And that's at the Improv-A-Go-Go at Huge Theater, 31st and Lindale. As always, you can keep in touch with us on our Facebook page, Next at Bat, / I always do that backwards.
Forward slash?
Yeah. But I do it backwards. So, facebook.com/ apparently, Next at Bat, or send us an email at nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com. As Eric said, iTunes, please rate and subscribe. That helps us out. And please join us next week. Our guest will be Samaritan Casting, the Passing of the Torch episode. You'll know what that means next week. But until then, as always,
praise Jaibosh.